thanks to our sponsor, Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 384. Today, CJ and I are going to run through a little bit of Microsoft Cloud news and some competitive cloud landscape news. Recorded live November the 5th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word, Shift Happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. Back to the show. Good morning, CJ. How are you?
Good morning. I am, well, I could be better. We could know the outcome of the election would be nice. I said to you before the recording, maybe I need to go down there with my own abacus and help him out.
And I tell you, you are much chipper than I am. I'm okay, like, staying up really late for, like, a sporting event. You know, living on the East Coast, that, you know, we don't start them until late. So you people on the West Coast, you know,
We have to leave work early to come home to watch the game.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I'm running on, like, 2 days now of staying up, like, really late trying to watch the election stuff, getting up really early to drive my son to swim practice. I'm dragging now, man.
You need this thing to end.
Like we talked about in our last episode, we're recording this on Thursday morning, November the 5th, the outcome is not known. We're in that phase. If anybody else is following this, we're in that part where there were a handful of states that have not been decided yet, and everyone's waiting for these counts to trickle in to where we can hopefully find out. Sounds like we might know today, but when we're recording it, we don't know it. You and I are going to keep our political views out of the show because we don't really listen to it, but I was going to say, you know, the part, like, what have I been doing since we last got together?
Watching TV.
I love, like, the details of the process. I find it fascinating to watch the stats and some of the lawsuits that are being filed and then the process that's going on. I find this whole process to be fascinating and watch it. And I'm getting irrationally irritated with the people outside of the United States saying, what the hell is wrong with you people? Whatever. I'm like going, I'll tell you what's wrong with us. We are 300 and some odd million people in this country. We have a free and fair election that's very transparent. We are a collection of independent states under a federal government. Each state does voting their own way. And each one can do things their own way.
Yep.
And we're watching the process play out the exact way it's supposed to. So,
yeah. Sometimes it takes a while.
This is how you hold a free and fair election. So, booyah.
Yeah. And then it's like, it really is like 50 countries, right? In some ways, or more, including territories and all that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's a huge operation. I'm amazed. You know, like, I don't know what you guys in Florida do, but your results they haven't finished. They're very, very close. There's a couple of percent left or something, but it's...
Ours were done like the night of.
Oh, I thought there's still a few being counted in Florida. But anyway, my point is, like, the vast majority got done really, really quick. And it's one of the biggest states. It's incredible.
Yeah. Third biggest state in the country. Yeah. I thought that we were done that night. It was done enough to where they could call it, but...
Oh, yeah.
I think that there's still some counting going on from... some of, like, the ballots, the provisional type stuff that goes in and stuff, but, like, the vast majority is done. It's not like what we're dealing with right now if anything, you know, Florida got a bad name for like counting votes and stuff back in 2000 in the George Bush, Al Gore. Yeah. Mm. And definitely cleaned our process up. So things are, it's a lot better, but.
You know, the fact you can get to, I think looking at the New York Times or whatever right now, it's at 96% in. That's a huge amount of votes and it came in very, very quick. Whereas now we're talking about Nevada, and Nevada, we were joking just before the show came on that, you know, it's weird when you go to Nevada, go to a conference in Vegas, you know, there's people working all night, but during the election, they seem to knock off at 5 o'clock and go home.
I don't want to get too angry about this stuff or get too like vocal about it, because I mean, this stuff is exactly what I complained about with people outside the country doing it. But yeah, I mean, the tongue in cheek side of me was like, wait a minute. Of all the states in our country that are having trouble with the counting and getting it done, it's the one with Las Vegas.
Yeah,
you're the guys that are having it. And let me get this straight. I've been to Vegas plenty of times, but you guys are the ones that are going home early? Like, what the hell?
It seems really odd.
These people in Georgia stayed up all night long. Anyway, it's...
Do-do-do-ding. This one's for Biden. Do-do-do-ding. This one's for Trump. Do-do-do-ding.
Can I get another beer? I'm still voting.
I had a friend that joked that maybe they're going so slowly because before they open a ballot, they have to pull a handle and get three tomatoes in a row.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Maybe they didn't shut down the county. Maybe they just had to go hit the buffet.
That's true. Maybe they're too hammered. They can't read the ballots correctly.
Yeah. To those of you who are in Nevada, I hope we're not losing our Nevada contingent, just having a little bit of fun. I'm from Florida and I'm not also Irish, so I'm used to the butt of a lot of jokes, but there's some of them. Some of the memes that are flying around and stuff are hilarious. But anyway.
Yeah. Hopefully next time we'll know. We'll see.
Hopefully next time we'll know. I will tell you that I have found that a great way to deal with very slow election results coming in is I started working on a new Lego. I started working on the Lamborghini Scion.
That's nice.
Oh my God. I mean, for those people who are listeners that are fans of Lego, adults that are fans of building Lego sets, I found the 911 to be awesome. The 911 GTRS, GT3RS Technic set was awesome for just how detailed it was, and everything about it was an awesome experience. The Bugatti was my most favorite set that I had ever built because of just how complicated it was, how much you had to pay attention, the story and the podcast that went along with it. The Lamborghini is right up there with the Bugatti. It doesn't have a podcast go along with it, but oh my, the video series that goes with it.
That's so cool.
It really is. I highly recommend. I know you did the orange 911. I highly recommend. I thought you did build it.
No, sitting in a box, unopened.
The Bugatti is awesome. And I'm right now, just because there was a podcast that went along with the Bugatti, it wins out a little bit over the Lambo, but yeah, it's too cool. So
that sounds cool.
Yeah. How about you, man? What else has been going on with you?
Well, I got a new Raspberry Pi 4 to replace my ancient Raspberry Pi. I think it was a 2. It had like 1 gig of RAM or something though. So this is a whopping 8 gig of RAM on a Raspberry Pi. It's the new Raspberry Pi that's come out. And so I've been fiddling around with my flight tracking stuff and replacing what's been going on there. So that's a little sort of pet project I've been fiddling around with on the side.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, much like the other Raspberry Pis, better hardware. It's got onboard Wi-Fi. You can do 2 4K HDMI feeds out of it. I'm not sure why you'd want to run a dual screen Pi, but you could. What else? USB 3, so, stuff like that.
I had an idea for taking one of those and I have a TV in my office, and I had an idea for hooking up a Raspberry Pi just to log into a dashboard that I use for like sales stuff and marketing everything. So that, and I thought the Pi would be a perfect way to do that. So like when it boots up, it immediately goes to this webpage, logs in and just shows it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you could do that. Yeah. You can get like there's, you know, Raspbian, which is like the Linux distro that is pretty popular for Raspberry Pi based on Debian. And you can get like a desktop environment on it running and all that stuff. Pretty straightforward. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to more RAM because the other one was pretty slow.
Yeah. That's cool. It's so cool what they've done and how pumped up people are about it.
And it's so attainable. Like, they're relatively cheap, you know, for a whole computer, right? It's incredible.
It's, you know, something just dawned on me to something you might be interested in. So I did this for some of my recording stuff for my class, for my course. I've noticed that like having a teleprompter would be handy when you wanted to always like look at the screen in front of you. And some of these things are really expensive. Like there's another guy that does a podcast or live stream. Asked him what he was using. He sent me a solution and I was like, oh, that's like a $900 setup. Like that seems a little crazy. I already had a teleprompter, just the screen piece, but it was sized for a smaller iPad that I don't have anymore. So did a bunch of research. You might like this for your Raspberry Pi. I found an 8-inch 4K screen. It's not touch, 4K screen. It takes HDMI in.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's an HDMI pass-through. So you can have one set up for like having it go in and then having it go right back out to like a TV or something. And it's made for like videographers or for camera people.
Yeah.
So it's got the screw-in thing so that you can have you could do like a clamp.
Yeah.
Like that, like one of the kind of clamps on it and then screw it in and have it clamped to something like to do like this.
Cool.
Sorry, you guys can't see it on the screen. So yeah, I got that. But this thing, $170.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I often need to plug it into a screen to fiddle around with stuff. Like if it goes offline for whatever reason, can't hit it over the net, like can't SSH into it over the network, things like that.
Yeah. It's handy. I mean, I definitely like it. So
nice.
What do you say we do some news? We have a bit of news and then we do a couple picks.
Perfecto.
It's kind of a quiet news time right now. I've been scouring the Azure news and the 365 news and there's not a lot of stuff going on. I mean, there's like the classic Azure, I was going to say the Azure noise and I don't really mean it like that, but they like that they ship stuff just at a stupid cadence, a crazy fast cadence.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that there's not too much that we can do, but anyway, why don't we jump into some newsy stuff?
Sounds good.
This episode is sponsored by ShareGate. You probably didn't get into cloud engineering to spend hours manually sifting through layers of data or manually creating reports to understand and explain your Azure costs. Neither did the IT pros at ShareGate, which is why they built ShareGate Overcast. ShareGate Overcast is an Azure cost intelligence tool that reduces manual monitoring and helps you make cost-efficient engineering decisions. And it can help you lower your Azure bill. ShareGate Overcast scans your Azure environment daily and analyzes your cost data. It automatically identifies cost issues and gives you the insights that you need to fix problems fast. Plus, with personalized cost savings recommendations, you can be sure that you're only paying for the resources that you need. And best of all, you can get ShareGate Overcast for free. Find out more at ShareGate.com/cloudshow. This podcast is brought to you by Raygun.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy application experience for your customers? With Raygun Application Performance Monitoring, you have all the information you need at your fingertips to find and fix errors and performance problems across your tech stack down to the line of code. With Raygun, monitor the impact of your performance improvements, quickly identify and resolve issues, and see how your code performs in the hands of your customers, saving you time, money, and sanity. I've personally used Raygun and Hyperfish for the last 4 years to help me sleep better at night knowing the customers we've worked so hard to get are having a great experience. We use Raygun to alert engineers proactively so that we can be the ones to tell customers when we've fixed the problem instead of them calling us to say something's wrong. Raygun.com is my secret weapon in shipping high-quality code. Check it out at Raygun.com and get up and running in minutes.
And we're back. All right, CJ, got a couple conferences that I've noticed that are coming up that may be interesting to some of our listeners. One that I've been interested in, but I've never attended it in person, but I'm always curious to see like what they're doing and just kind of see what their approach is Amazon Web Services, AWS. And so they have a huge event coming up. They usually do their event in Las Vegas. It's called their AWS reInvent conference. But this year it's going to be different. Not only is it going to be completely virtual, which is not surprising based on what everybody else is doing. But the other thing that's really interesting about it is that it's over the course of 3 weeks and it's completely free. So they're starting it on November the 30th, which is Black Friday, and they're going on until December the 18th. So that it's cool. One that they normally do live in Vegas takes up like multiple hotels. And their conference centers. So it's a fairly large event. So Hey, if you're interested, you can go to reinvent.awsevents.com or just check the show notes. And you can...
I want to watch some keynotes.
And I want to see, like, I'm going to take some time and look at their schedule and see if there's a couple sessions just to grab, because, you know, it's always interesting to see how somebody else presents stuff and how you've got like that Azure kind of feel. And I'm curious, like, what the AWS guys do. I've never watched one of their sessions, so I'm interested.
Yeah, for sure. You said there were two. What's the other one?
The other one is GitHub. Sorry, thank you. GitHub Universe. This one is going on. It's overlap with AWS Invent. It's a global developer event. Again, it's a 100% virtual event. It will be live streamed to the Americas and Europe. They're doing an interesting one. They're doing it in an interesting way. Live streamed to the Americas and Europe from December the 8th through the 10th from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And then they will read, so only a couple hours, only about 4.5 hours per day. And then they will restream it to the APAC region from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. IST. I'm not sure what time zone that is offhand, but that's
the time. Is that India?
I think so.
India Standard Time.
There you go.
Yep.
So it starts at 9 a.m. Pacific time on December 8th through the 10th. And then from December 9th through the 11th, it starts at 9:30 a.m. India Standard Time.
Gotcha.
And that's at githubuniverse.com.
I will definitely be tuning in for that one.
And there will be yet another conference as well that I don't know if they've announced it yet or not, but it's coming up in December. And it is the Microsoft 365 Collaboration Conference, what used to be the SharePoint Conference. And they've been doing a call for sessions and picking sessions and stuff over the course of this past week. So keep your eye out for that one. That one's going to be also a completely virtual event as well in the middle of December.
Hey, speaking of Microsoft 365 things, the long-awaited flagship feature that many of us have been desperate for and have been waiting for a really long time has finally arrived, or will be arriving in December, which is multi-account sign-in.
Whoa.
So being able to... Yeah.
Wait, where did you see that?
What do you mean, where did I see that? The news dropped.
I didn't know that. Huh. On Teams?
Yeah.
Did you put that in
multi-account the show notes? Multi-account sign-in. I did. I put it in our show notes. Yeah, so in December, multi-account sign-in. So you'll be able to sign in with multiple accounts. And I imagine it's sort of similar to... Okay, so everybody gets confused in Teams. They think they've already got multi-account sign-in. They don't. They've got multi-tenant sign-in, right? So with the same account, you can switch between tenants that you have access to, right? So you might have your access to a work tenant and access to a partner's tenant or something like that. And you can switch between those. But you're still limited to one sign-in account, right? This, I believe, is the ability to sign in with multiple accounts and have access to multiple tenants. But you're shaking your head.
I just read it. They just updated it today.
Kidding me.
Quote, "We're adding support within the Teams desktop to be able to add one personal account along with one work and school account, change their profile picture, and switch between accounts and orgs through settings."
Clutching defeat from the jaws of victory.
If that's not a tease. Now, the way I read that is that, again, you can add a personal account, which I don't know anybody that has a Teams personal account. And then you have a work and school account. Change the profile picture. So I guess that's new. And then switch between accounts and orgs through settings. So that means you don't, but I do that right now.
You can't be signed in with a personal account and a work or school account at the same time. That's what's new. Man, way to let me down, AC. That's a shocker.
Quote, "Currently desktop Teams does not support multi-account sign-in. To switch to a different account, users have to sign out to one account out of one account and sign into another. They also have a few workarounds, including using Incognito in their browsers to use two different accounts simultaneously. There are hundreds of requests to multiple threads in Teams user voice for this feature dating back to 2016, if not before. I'm surprised this count isn't even higher, given Microsoft's recently published..."
This doesn't solve the problem.
It does. It sure doesn't, does it?
No. Here I was getting all antsy about it, and then they've updated it. Or Mary Jo Foley, in fact, updated the post today as we're going to air with the qualification and the letdown. This is absurd. Anyway, okay. Forget I ever said anything. It's a pointless waste of time.
We give you an epically awesome feature that is not going to be useful to many people.
It's not going to be useful. No. This is the thing. The Teams team currently think that you're going to use Teams in your personal life with your personal account with like your family, right? And they've built a whole bunch of...
That's what Google's for.
What was it called? Like Teams for Life or something? Teams for something. Anyway, there's like a... I don't even know. I've never heard about it since it launched. But, you know, it's the ability to sign with a personal account and you get like shared calendar with your family and there's like, I don't know, there's weird stuff like password management and stuff in there and there's all sorts of stuff nobody will ever use. And they're focusing on that? My word.
That's disappointing.
Wow. Okay. Dom dom. Forget I ever said anything. Let's erase that one.
That's really disappointing.
Okay. What about a better one? Have you got one that's better for us this time?
I do. Well, I think it's better. It's a bit self-serving. I think it's better. I know there's a lot of other developers out there that are liking it as well. I'm sure there's some IT pros that are going to bitch and moan about it. There was a Microsoft Service Center notification that went out. It is number, make sure I grab this right, MC225570. And they have stated that Microsoft Teams, the web app, is no longer going to support IE11 as of the end of November 2020.
That's not very far away.
Thank God.
Yeah, I'm sort of stunned that they can... I mean, okay, I have two opinions on this. One, I'm really stunned they can do it so quickly. Like they announced it a couple of months ago or something, but even then it's really only 3 months' notice, which means either one of two things. Nobody's really using Teams in a web browser in corporate America or corporate world, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't really have that bigger impact. And so they might as well make a change. It's really short. Or they just are really hamstrung by IE11 and they just need to make this change and just be damned with the fallout of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one part. The second part is like, I'm stoked they're dropping support for IE11 because everybody else now can breathe a sigh of relief and go, oh yeah, I don't have to support it in my app too because Microsoft doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, which has been funny, right? Because so many people, so many organizations have dropped support for IE11. Not organizations, providers. Let me say it like that. So many providers have dropped support for IE11 for a long time. Salesforce dropped support for it. Google Suite, G Suite dropped support for it. GitHub dropped support for it. So many of these companies that of tools that so many organizations use, they already had dropped it. It took forever for Microsoft to actually drop it because Microsoft had to have a browser that would address the IE11, that would address the deficiencies when IE11 was killed. Now that they have that. What's a little disappointing is that when they announced that IE11 was on the deathbed, it was on the death row, I guess. So it wasn't going to get removed for many, many months. I think it was going to go into sometime late in 2021 is when it was finally going to be fully not supported for Microsoft 365.
Yeah.
This one did surprise me that the news came out this week and basically said, in less than a month, we're no longer going to support IE11. Like you, I welcome the news. It's not as dramatic as what we talked about last week where Microsoft said that, hey, you know, don't forget that SharePoint 2010 workflows are just going to stop working this week.
Yeah.
So I think it's not as dramatic as that because there's not as much stuff you have to build. And I sure as hell hope there weren't people that were building custom team solutions and making them work for IE11.
For IE11, yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm still building my websites to make sure they support the 640 by 480 resolution. But, you know...
And
still make sure that we have a place for you to...
The flashing, rotating, scrolling banners. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we still have a spot at my house for you to hook your horse up when you come over. We don't have a driveway. Yeah. We have like the little like thing out front where you just do it. They have some water and stuff.
Backwards
like
compatibility is important.
We'll make sure that everybody can... Yeah, everybody has a spot to put their modes of transportation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll Flintstone it with my car.
There you go.
Okay. So if anybody out there is confused about what's going on with TikTok and Oracle, like we've alluded to a couple of times on the show, there's a good article here on CNET that we found, which talks about the current state of play, which as of November the 1st, at least anyway. And it goes something like this. Oracle and Walmart are getting into bed with TikTok only to the tune of 20% of ownership stake. So it's not an outright purchase, right? They will own 20% of a new entity called TikTok Global, which is expected to go public next year as well. So the other 80%, which the article talks about, is, well, does this mean that ByteDance, who currently own TikTok, does that mean they own the other 80%? The argument that they're making is that they don't own the other 80% because there's investors in ByteDance that these shares of TikTok Global will be going to, right? Mm. So there's investment companies and all that sort of stuff. So I guess that's what they mean by it will be controlled by other people, right? It won't just be TikTok, it won't just be ByteDance, it'll be controlled by other shareholders. So it's all a little bit complicated and there's court challenges about it. There's yet to be determined whether the Chinese government will approve this TikTok Oracle deal. That's still, I think, a little up in the air. And then there's lawsuits in the US about it as well that are flying around. So it's still pretty messy, but you can go read this article and learn a little bit more about the current state of play if you're interested.
I added this to our show notes because it's confusing where this really wasn't an interest of purchasing or acquiring TikTok until the United States government or the Trump administration decided to start to put a ban on it. And then it's like, well, we got to figure out a way to actually make it to where, you know, we don't get banned. Still, the way they're doing it, I'm like, how does this address the fundamental concern of why they wanted to ban it? Passing no judgment on TikTok or people that use TikTok. It's just like, I understand what the fundamental concern was, and I'm not sure how this really changes the technical problem that was there. But it helped a little bit answer some of the questions. I guess to me, it still doesn't answer the whole, so does it fix the problem? I'm still a little confused by that.
Well, there's always, they're dancing around that. That's the problem. I don't think any of this solves that. And they've kind of been forced into this situation. So they're trying to figure out these convoluted, bizarre sort of business setups to make that happen. But it sounds like all the parties don't necessarily agree. Anywho, more steps for TikTok.
Oh, that's interesting. I've got Microsoft Graph, Graphy news for us. There is a page. It's the What's New in Microsoft Graph. And there's a update from... It's published on November the 2nd, but it's the October 2020 new and generally available update. So I guess it's looking back at what is new and not like what is being released today. So it's just, there's a whole bunch of lists of a bunch of things that they've done. So you've got like stuff like change notifications, production apps that can subscribe to lifecycle notifications. You can subscribe to like chat messages, events, contact type events and stuff. Doesn't really say exactly what's new there. I mean, it says it's generally available. So I guess that I didn't realize that change notifications were not generally available prior to that. There's some stuff around identity and access, around teamwork, which does it irk you that the stuff that like when it comes to APIs, they refer to Microsoft Teams as teamwork?
Yeah, I don't know why.
When they talk about tasks that are in the to-do app, they call them, it's the to-do API. So I'm not really sure what this means. Like what, why do we have a separate thing for teamwork instead of Microsoft Teams? But it's just, I don't know. Nobody ever accused them of having a good job at naming. But
it sounds like, it looks like what they've tried to do is say, rather than calling APIs anything to do with the actual product name, genericize them, right? So things like identity and access and teamwork would make sense. Except then right below it, they've got to-do tasks, which is a product name. They should have just called it tasks. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. I guess my point is they're inconsistent.
Yeah.
If it was identity and access, then, or if it was identity and access and teamwork, then to-do tasks don't really make sense. Right. Because sometimes it's like product, sometimes it's like more like generalized, and sometimes it isn't related. I mean, like teamwork isn't really related. It's like chat messages. How is that teamwork?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever.
Don't know.
Yeah. So.
All right. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's the link for the What's New overview for the October 2020 updates for Microsoft Graph.
Sweet. Okay. IoT, Microsoft has been named a leader in the Gartner 2020 Magic Quadrant for IoT. Now, I don't do much in IoT other than my own little sort of, playing around with Raspberry Pis and stuff at home. But Microsoft have got a blog post about this and also have a link to the full complimentary Gartner report. And so you can go read the whole thing as quiet bedtime reading while we're waiting for the Nevada results. Sorry, I had to say that.
Yeah.
This will, if nothing puts you to sleep, Magic Quadrants will. I mean, they're pretty fascinating reading. But if this floats your boat, then, go take a look. It's quite interesting. Like Microsoft's done a lot in the space around, the services in Azure to support this stuff with, things like Cosmos DB and the timeline databases and Azure Sphere and all that sort of stuff. So, Microsoft's doing quite a lot in the space, and I guess they've been rewarded by being seen alongside, I don't know who there's a company called PTC. I have never heard of them, but then there's also Hitachi as well. And they're the only three in the top right quadrant, in the leader quadrant. Everybody else seems pretty clustered in the the middle to upper right of the niche players section. Mm. I mean, even AWS, right, they're in the niche players section, mm-hmm. which I found interesting.
Yeah, I do too.
Honestly, I don't know enough to have an opinion whether they, you know, what's right or wrong about this, but I thought I'd bring it up for those who do work on this sort of stuff. You can go check out the full report and go read more about their methodology and why people are in those certain areas.
It's an interesting area. It's one that I don't play in. IoT is not one that I play in at all, but it's interesting. I'm surprised, like looking at the magic quadrant, I'm surprised you don't have people that are farther up to the right. I mean, when the ones that are in the top right quadrant, which is what you're always which you're generally shooting for, it's the three that are in the top right quadrant are barely out. They're right, like almost right in the middle. They're as close as you can get to the middle of the entire quadrant. Like not just the one square, but like all four squares, like the middle of the box.
You can't put them in the top right. Otherwise, those companies wouldn't have anything to keep schmoozing Gartner for.
Got to write a check somehow, right?
Yeah.
I think that's all the news we got, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you want to do some picks?
Let's do some picks. AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. Mr. Johnson, you have a pick for us.
Yes, I certainly do. So you remember back in like 2007, 2008, this whole anonymous collective, you know, the dude with the the V for Vendetta mask group and all of that.
Guy
they started
Fox,
coming out with all... Sorry?
The Guy Fawkes mask?
Yeah. Similar. Yeah. I don't know where the history of that mask comes from. But anyway.
I don't either. I never heard it the way that you had described it. So I was like, no, I didn't. Is that the same one? I'm like, yeah, it is. I'm like, oh, no, wait a minute.
Yeah, you're right.
But I don't even know who Guy Fawkes is. So.
Same thing. But anyway, so way back, Anonymous was like this big thing and all of this. And now it has been found out who sort of the founder of this hacker group was this person called Aubrey Cottle, a.k.a. I don't even know how to pronounce their handle. But anyway, they've come out as the founder of this collective called Anonymous. And it's sort of got a bit of, there's an AMA on Reddit with this person, and it talks to them, it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Talks a little bit about, how it came to be and how they got found out and where things are currently at with people that threw them under the bus, all that sort of stuff. But now he's coming out sort of revitalizing the movement around a new initiative, which is to bring down QAnon, which is sort of this more recent movement around, in the US at least, around the political movement, I suppose you could call it that, right?
And the FBI calls it a domestic terror organization.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Certainly a whole bunch of disinformation and all this sort of stuff going on as well. So anyway, so he's come out and said, cool, well, let's, his new mission is to bring down QAnon and expose it for what it is. Anyway, it was pretty interesting. There's lots of articles that he links to in here. It's answered lots of questions from people. So I thought it was a fascinating read.
Hmm. That was good. I mean, that AMA was long. I mean, he even like,
yeah,
I'm going to go to sleep for a little bit and came back, kept answering questions and everybody came back and... It was it's really good. I did not get anywhere near through the majority
of it. I said, okay, we're 2 hours in. Don't worry. I intend to be here for a very, very long time. I know everybody is going to have many questions. Edit 3. By very long time, I literally mean days.
Yeah, it's good.
What do you got for us?
I have one that apparently I stole from you because you saw the same thing. We were both thinking the same thing because this was also on my list.
You're not stolen. Yeah, no, this is awesome.
Remember Voyager 2, the satellite that was just sent out to see...
The little satellite that did.
Yeah, and just had... It was launched... Oh, God, it was launched back, what, in the 60s or 70s, I think?
Yes.
So, I think...
70s, I think.
And this is the one that... And it's outside 77.
77, yeah, there we go.
August 77, and it's 17 light hours away. It is more than...
That's a really long way.
Oh, my... 18.7 billion kilometers from Earth.
That's pretty awesome, huh? I loved a backstory about Voyager 2 that came around. about the sort of the political angle around Voyager and how it all came to be and how some of the scientists built it with a lot more longevity than designed for. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
There was, I'll try and remember what video I saw these interviews in about the sort of the political backstory about how it all got funded and how it all came to be and sort of the horse trading that was going on and all that sort of stuff. And at the time, the politics did not let them, was not that keen on building something that was supposed to do this, right? Mm-hmm. Was supposed to go for that long and last this long and all of this sort of stuff. But the scientists were sort of sneaking in scope creep into the project mm-hmm. because they knew that it would ensure that the probe lasted a lot longer. Like the sort of, you know, the wiring and the RTG, right? The thing that powers it, right? This radio isotope. I can't remember what RTG stands for. Something generator, thermal generator, something like that.
Yeah.
And and how they built this thing to last a lot longer than it was originally supposed to. And now look at it go. Yeah. It's 17 light years away, at light hours away. That's amazingly long way.
One of the things that's neat about it, the part that's neat about this, about the link that I had to share, is that NASA was able to successfully communicate with it after they did a significant hardware update on the part of the deep space network, which is there's three dishes, antenna dish around the world. There's one in Australia, there's one in Spain, and there's one in California. Oh, shoot. Is that right?
Can't remember.
I think that's right.
What was the three you said? Spain?
Spain, Australia, and California.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's one in North America. What they were able to do with this upgrade, it was a big X-band core upgrade at the center of the antenna dish that they updated. NASA was able to send a command out to Voyager 2. Voyager 2 woke up, received it, did what it was asked to do, and sent a command back to NASA. And they're like, holy crap, this thing is still talking to us.
Isn't that amazing?
It is now. So I believe, and I think this is true for both Voyagers, Voyager 1 and 2. I think, and definitely for Voyager 2, or Voyager 1, but I think they're both interstellar now, which, for those who don't know what that means, it's like it's outside our solar system. It's between two solar systems. So Voyager 2 is now outside of our solar system along with Voyager 1. I think Voyager 2 is.
Yeah, I think you're right. What's cool about this, though, is like the dish that they used to do this is in Canberra, just outside Canberra in Australia, because they can only talk to Voyager 2 from the Southern Hemisphere now because it's in an orbital, I guess, it's below the orbital plane of the Earth in a certain way. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you can only talk to it from the Southern Hemisphere. And so they're using this old dish, but that they've renovated it. It's a 70-meter wide dish, which I thought was pretty massive. I wonder if it's the same stuff they used to talk to the Apollo missions.
But the
I don't think that was Canberra. That was, no, this dish, because there was a ground station in Australia. I don't know if it was this one. I don't think it was off the top of my head, but there was a ground station in Australia that was involved in the moon landings and getting telemetry and video and all that. The actual moon landing, I think, was relayed through a ground station that was picking it up in Australia.
Mm.
And this dish is 48 years old, which is too young for the moon landing, right?
Well,
on the 50th anniversary.
No, hold on, because I think I'm looking at a history of the Deep Space Network, and I'm trying to see. It was established in 1958.
Which was?
The Deep Space Network. I don't know about that dish itself.
Yeah, I was talking about just this dish. I just wondered if they repurposed this dish from that program and used it for this.
Yes. So the three are in Australia, Madrid, Spain, and Goldstone, which is near Barstow, California. It's cool.
Gotcha.
I've seen the command center for the DSN. It's cool. Over at the JPL lab. Well, that's kind of redundant. Over at JPL. In Pasadena, outside Los Angeles.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I got the JPL director took me on a tour when I was over there giving a class many years ago, and that was so cool. One of the guys in my class is like, "You want to do a tour?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "When do you want to go?" I'm like, "I'm teaching a class. You guys tell me. I mean, if you want," he goes, "We can do it like over lunch. Just take like a 3-hour lunch break." I'm like, "Fine,
okay."
It's your class. Come with me. He goes, "Yeah, well, you got to drive over there. So we'll stop by In-N-Out on the way." I'm like, "Oh my God, is it getting any better?"
In-N-Out and JPL. Yeah, can't get much better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Nice pick. I like that.
Cool. Well, CJ, last time we finished up an episode, we said that we were hopeful that by the next time we got together and recorded an episode, we would know who the next president was of the United States. We didn't today. I was just about to say I'm going to feel confident that we were going to know by the next time we record, we will probably have a better idea. Hopefully we will. Yeah. Hopefully we'll know who the general consensus is, barring lawsuits and stuff like that. So
yeah. Yeah, maybe.
We know that we will know by December the 14th. That's the one thing that we do know, because that's when the states have to certify and they have to do their electorate votes. They certify much sooner than that, but there may be like court cases and stuff like that. So
anyway, I can't wait that long. I can't watch that much TV.
Were you in the United States when Bush Gore happened?
No.
Yeah,
no.
That was fun.
I bet that took a long time, right?
Actually 14 days.
Okay, that's not so bad.
It was 14 days. I heard somebody say 14 days. It felt like it was longer, though, because I remember when the case went to the Supreme Court said something like, the decision that came down, it resulted in the Gore camp saying, we don't have enough time. And
I say
that would have been December the 14th, or I think it's 41 days after the day of the election. This year, that's December the 14th.
Gotcha. So, okay.
Anyway.
Interesting.
I hope we know.
Well, we'll stay tuned. We can hope. Yep.
Cool.
All right, AC. Thanks again.
Yeah, man. Have a good one.
Talk to you soon.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.